The next case on the calendar for oral argument is Nelson versus Nelson. Good morning, counsel.
Good morning.
While you are getting settled, and please do take your time to get yourself in order and ready for the argument, I'll just remind you that you will each have 15 minutes to make your argument. The timing is indicated in the lighting at the podium. And counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. It's important that you identify yourself and identify the party you represent when you begin your arguments because they are being recorded. Again, when you are ready, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Lori Mack Wagner, M-A-C-K hyphen Wagner, W-A-G-N-E-R, counsel for the appellant, Daniel Stephen Nelson, and it's Daniel, D-A-N-I-E-L, Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, Nelson, N-E-L-S-O-N. Your Honors, we are here appealing a decision, the December 20th, 2022 decision of the Honorable Teresa Curry regarding the suspension of appellant's maintenance obligation, but then also reducing it to $2,000 a month. It's undisputed that in November of 2021, my client, appellant, lost his job. He was a highly paid executive for an electronics aviation company. He had a 2-year non-compete. There's no dispute in the record that it was an involuntary situation. He filed his motion to modify, terminate, suspend maintenance. The parties attended mediation. They were able to reach a stipulation whereby his maintenance would be suspended. And at the time, the obligation had evolved to a $5,000 a month permanent spousal maintenance award. It was in different stages, and at that time, it was $5,000 a month. He had been paying it without incident for many years until this unfortunate incident happened. So in mediation, the parties agreed that it would be suspended, the maintenance, and that he would have monthly reporting requirements and that he would have to do very detailed reports about what he was doing to find a job. And several requirements, and there's no dispute that he complied with this request. At some point, the respondent became dissatisfied with that, and the appellant made a motion to continue the suspension.
Or the alternative to modify spousal maintenance.
Correct.
Here's the question I kind of have, the big question. We review modification of spousal maintenance for abuse of discretion, correct?
Correct.
All right, and so what we have here is, you know, I think an undisputed record, and, you know, there has been a 1-year suspension of spousal maintenance entirely, and then the motion is brought and the district court substantially reduces from $5,000 to $2,000. How do we get to an abuse of discretion conclusion on this record?
Well, Your Honor, the reason that there's the short answer is that because the method used to calculate income for my client is an illegal reason. It is using a reduction in budget as a means of being able to afford maintenance. And the way that I get there is that first we look at what is the definition of maintenance, and it says that it's payments from future income or earnings of one spouse for the support and maintenance of the other. So we start with the premise that it comes from income. And then there is the ability if someone is acting in bad faith, and this is where the Melius case comes in, where it says that, okay, if somebody is not acting in good faith, you don't use the actual income. You can actually impute income to that person.
That's a case involving the initial establishment of spousal maintenance, right? Rather than a modification context.
Well, I believe that it was, yes, I think it was initial, but it did talk about the distinction of how it's not the same test as in child support. It's a different test in the sense that, Yeah, I believe that was an initial divorce, but they had been separated, and he had, you know, he had a really high-paying job, and then he started a different company, and then his income was substantially lower, and he said that he was making a lifestyle change. And so I believe you're correct on that. But I think it wouldn't matter in the sense that if they're saying that this is the test for a spousal maintenance obligor, whether it's on modification or an original determination. Here, the problem is there is no bad faith that is part of the record. As a matter of fact,
why shouldn't we conclude that the district court made an implicit finding that your client unjustifiably reduced his income by working a low-paying job while still maintaining a very high standard of living, which is evidenced by the budget that he submitted, his monthly expenses?
You know, I thought about that, but then there's the findings that specifically say that she asked that question and did not, and got the answer that there was nothing specific that he should have been doing differently. So there are findings that where she's saying essentially that I asked respondents' counsel and they couldn't tell me anything he should be doing differently. And the problem is that if you're talking about using someone's, like, he has a high lifestyle at the time that he is terminated. He has a certain house, he has a certain car, he has contractual commitments, he has things like that.
It's significantly higher than at the time of the dissolution.
Correct, but at the same time, he went years and years without incident, paying the maintenance that he was owed. And so the concern is, if someone loses their job and they have to actually still maintain some of their expenses, it's not like you can instantly be like, okay, I have to reduce my entire lifestyle. And I think also the hope is while you're looking for a job that it's only going to be temporary. And unfortunately, there's a lot of evidence in the record about how this is a very specific, narrow industry. He was concerned about that. There's
a
non-compete.
He's working part-time for $14 an hour. I mean, there's lots of jobs that pay that you can get that are on, you know, through those online websites that would pay at least twice that, you know, but not in the niche industry but anyway, so back to the legal issue. Why is the district court's order, because we're dealing with a modification, not an initial award. So why is it unreasonable and unfair? And were there findings of fact that you're challenging, or what are you hanging your hat on?
I'm hanging my hat on the fact that the court did not, I don't see any explicit finding of bad faith. And actually none was really specifically stated at the hearing or raised by the other side, just that he may be relying on his wife's income, or he might have lost his mojo or something to that effect. But when asked specifically, what should he be doing differently, nobody could say anything about that. And so I'm relying on the fact that you do need this bad faith employment or finding of bad faith.
The burden of proof on him, he's the one asking for the modification. So I don't know that the burden is on the former wife to bring forward affirmative evidence.
Yes, and he did, just so your honors are aware, he did put in a lot of evidence of all his reports and everything that he was doing. And he understands that. So it's like he submitted all the evidence of his efforts of what he was doing. And I think the idea of the part-time job was so he can continue his extensive efforts in looking for the full-time job. And so that was our main concern is that, you know, and there's also case law in the child support arena that specifically states that you cannot use a party's budget to determine income. And again, for the same reasons I was talking about.
Yeah, but here I'm looking at the statutes, and on a motion for modification of maintenance, this is 518A.39, subdivision 2E. Court shall apply, in addition to all other relevant factors, the factors for awarding maintenance initially under 518-552. And that 518-552 has a number of factors that can be considered, and one of them is the ability of the spouse from whom maintenance is sought to meet needs while meeting those of the spouse seeking maintenance. Isn't that really what the district court did here by comparing the two budgets and noting how much higher your client's budget was at the time of this motion than it had been at the time of dissolution, and just saying, boy, even taking wife's budget at the lowest amount, there's still this $2,000 loss, and boy, your budget, husband, shows me, the court, that he can spare that to pay $2,000 a month to wife. Why isn't that a sufficient legal basis for the district court to rely on?
I think the problem is that fundamentally you have to be paying maintenance out of your income, and if it's not your income, then it's imputed income. And the fact that he has to draw on assets to maintain his own assets because he, let's say he can't get out of them soon enough, that's under, even under the again, the child support law, which there's a case that we cited that says that you use that child support statute, the methods of imputed income for maintenance cases. It lists the three ways you impute income, and using someone's budget, because a budget, quite frankly, could be paid from assets. So then, in essence, the court is ordering him to pay maintenance not from income, but from his other assets, which some of which may have been, and I acknowledge that there wasn't a strict breakdown in the record of, like, were some of these from the divorce, and are we double-dipping by making him pay assets? But regardless, he would necessarily be having to pay from assets if he doesn't have the income to pay his own expenses and the wife's expenses. And also there is a finding that he couldn't pay his budget.
And I understand that wife in her motion referenced the severance payment that your client received back in, was it 2021? The court didn't make any findings about that, though, or suggest that that was a source of income or income replacement. Does a lack of such a finding preclude this court from assessing that income to your client?
Well, first, I would dispute. I did not see wife raise this as an issue and below, and I did not see the court rely on that at all. And most importantly, which was in our reply brief, the severance, when the wife is citing all these huge payments, that's actually a return of assets that he was required to invest. So that's not income. That's a partial return of assets that he was required to invest as CEO. And the other two components of that was COBRA payments for like 6 months and then some unused PTO for a few months. But there, those substantial payments, that's, I would say, misleading to say that that's income, because it's not. Because the record is very clear that he was required to pay it back, and or he had to pay those in and then would get that back.
You would agree that we don't need to focus our analysis on, or the district court didn't need to focus its analysis on, his actual current income if it did make an implicit finding that he was unjustifiably, he'd unjustifiably reduced his income by accepting this low-paying job, right? Because then if that finding is implicit, then the appropriate metric would be his earning capacity, right, rather than his current income.
Well, unfortunately, I mean, it's really a two-part problem. One is, if there is an implicit finding, then the next step is you need a finding as to, well, what is his earning capacity? He hasn't been able to find a job at that capacity for over a year. So there's no discussion in the district court's order about what income would be appropriate to use. The court must have thought, if that was the case, that it was something less than what his current earning capacity or his most recent job was, because it reduced the maintenance at some, to some level. But the problem is there's just no findings on that. There's no findings on the first step or the second step.
But didn't it reduce the maintenance based on the lowest shortfall? I mean, that was the reason why it reduced the maintenance award.
The court did have a lot of discussion about the shortfalls, but I believe the court cited the reason was that the court thought he could reduce, or he could cut out certain expenses on his budget and then pay that to the wife instead. That's the way I read it. Again, The court also acknowledged that he said he wasn't able to pay for his budget. He couldn't afford it. And so, you know, that's, I guess that's where the problem is. It's not really clear. I don't think there's any finding to support any of, like, either of those scenarios. Just if I could just take my last...
So is remand the relief you're seeking, or would that be more appropriate for findings?
Well, I mean, I think based on the record and based on what the court found, it's really a reversal, and it really should be a suspension, because if you look at what the court did for findings, the court talks about how he's not really, that there, no one can point to anything that he could do differently. So I don't see how we get a bad faith finding on that. And then also, there isn't any other income in the, or method other than his current actual income. And just, I just had, like, we also were disputing the wife's budget just because we think there's some expenses that were not in the standard of living that are allowed now. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you may proceed.
Good morning, may it please the court. My name is Michelle Kuhl, and I represent the respondent, Catherine Nelson. I think this focus on what exactly appellant's income is currently is a bit misplaced, in that it is true that spousal maintenance is defined as payments from future income, but if you look at the Minnesota Supreme Court's decision in Lee versus Lee in 2009, they interpret what that means, and they say future income means income earned post-dissolution. And so here, there was very few assets divided at the time of the dissolution, so any income he earned post-dissolution can qualify for spousal maintenance under the statute as it has been interpreted. But what I think we really have here is a failure of proof on appellant's part. He failed to show that he does not have the ability to pay spousal maintenance. He has argued now that he's not really incurring $11,000 of expenses, but that's the only budget that was submitted to the court.
But his income is $14,000 a year currently, and there's no finding of unjustifiable, you know, failure to look for new jobs or any kind of bad faith finding. I guess my concern is, what case law best supports your argument that the district court can kind of use the husband's budget as a proxy for his income and his, the sufficiency of his income to help support wife?
I think the closest case we have is Kedrowski case. It's from March 25th, 2019. And in that court case, this court affirmed spousal maintenance on a number of grounds, but it found it significant enough to mention that the obligor was maintaining a high level of standard of living despite having a reduced income. And so I do think that's worth looking at in terms of determining ability to pay, because spousal maintenance, again, is all about weighing ability to pay versus needs. And here we have a record which shows that wife has significantly reduced her spending in regard to the job loss, and she's trying to live frugally. She allowed him several months of suspended spousal maintenance, you know, recognizing that this is a difficult time period, that they're going to have some sacrifices. But husband, in the meantime, has not made any changes to his lifestyle, or at least did not prove that he had. And therefore, the court is within its discretion to weigh that in determining that he can afford spousal maintenance, albeit in a much reduced amount.
So you don't believe that we need to find that the district court implicitly, or conclude that the district court implicitly found that a husband had unjustifiably reduced his income or self-limited his income in order to affirm? That's not your position?
I don't think it's necessary to affirm, no, but I think that it could be read that way, because the court does discuss his employment prospects and then says, basically says, just leaves it at that. And, you know, wife can't really make a showing of what's going on in these job interviews. She thinks it's suspicious that it's been so long without him getting a new job. It's suspicious that he's been to the final round of three different jobs without getting any offers. But to be able to know what's going on in those interviews is not possible. So I think that the trial court recognized that, and it's a bit of a credibility determination of, is he really trying here? The court didn't explicitly make that bad faith finding, and I don't think it's necessary, but it could be read that way.
And you don't think it's necessary because your position is that he couldn't carry his burden simply by showing that his monthly income is lower than the reduced award, given his expenses? That's your position?
Correct. The record shows that regardless of what his income is, he did not show that he lacks the ability to pay. Because if you can afford to pay these luxury expenses, then you can afford to pay spousal maintenance. And interestingly, when wife had mentioned in her affidavit that husband continues to incur these expenses, his responsive affidavit didn't say, no, I've cut those out, but that's not what I'm incurring now. His responsive affidavit said, that's reasonable given the marital standard of living. So I think the argument that he's not actually incurring these $11,000 of expenses now is contrary to the record. The budget includes post-termination expenses like job search fees and COBRA expenses. So the idea that this is a budget that he only had pre-termination is really contrary to the record. In addition, I do think that the lump sum payments that he received at the time of termination are something that this court can consider in determining his ability to pay. There is no authority that these types of resources can't be considered. So,
but are we in a position as an error-correcting court of appeals to consider evidence that the district court didn't appear to consider?
Well, it didn't specify it in its order, but this court can affirm on any ground that the trial court could have reached its decision on. And so,
but if the district court didn't make a decision based on the appellant's income at all, because it certainly doesn't appear that it did. It was more, as you said, the assessment that husband had the finances to pay the reduced maintenance. Wouldn't we be overstepping? I mean, how would we be in a position to affirm on that different basis?
So I think they're different, but they're related because, again, if we're talking about financial resources and his ability to pay, the fact that he spent tens of thousands of dollars paying down debt and tens of thousands of dollars on a brand new roof demonstrates that he, you know, is not making a good faith effort to try to pay spousal maintenance. His spousal maintenance obligation pre-existed these other post-dissolution obligations.
But didn't he pay those while he was still paying spousal maintenance? He didn't ask to suspend until after that point, correct? He continued paying through the end of the year. I thought that was the case.
I don't recall the exact timing on when, but regardless, he knew that he had a spousal maintenance obligation and that it had it, that he would have to presumably be paying. So to be wasting, again, tens of thousands of dollars on these expenses without any showing about why the roof needed to be replaced, any showing about whether he could have had a payment plan for the debts, really shows that it's almost like dissipation, trying to get rid of these assets so that he can make an argument he doesn't have the ability to pay spousal maintenance.
But wouldn't that go towards more of an implicit finding of bad faith? Because there's no evidence in the record that he still has access to any of that severance, right? I mean, that's not part of any, that wasn't before the district court as being part of any present income he could still use to pay the reduced award of $2,000, right?
Well, I think some of it he may still have access to. Some of it was put in an E-Trade account. But you're right, the court didn't make specific findings on that, but I do think it's in the record. It was certainly part of the affidavit submitted with regard to the motion, and so it's a relevant consideration on that can support the trial court's decision. And so in determining whether there was an abuse of discretion in setting spousal maintenance at a reduced amount, I think it's relevant.
What about your counterpart's argument that, you know, essentially, husband, and everyone agrees he was meeting the requirements to submit reports that he was looking for work. So there's no finding that he wasn't actively seeking work. And again, there's no explicit finding of bad faith. If we were to conclude that we have to decide that the district court implicitly found that there was unjustifiable self-limitation of income, wouldn't that be a clearly erroneous implicit finding given that he was actively seeking work and filing his reports on time? I mean, how do you square those two things?
Well, I think, you know, anyone can go through the motions of applying to jobs and filing reports of jobs that you've applied to. The question is whether he's actually trying when he goes to the interviews. And that at its core is a credibility finding, which I think this court typically defers to the trial court on. And so it can't be clearly erroneous just because he submitted some applications and kept track of those applications. When we're talking a whole year and now 2 years where he's still, so supposedly a highly qualified executive, still has not received a single job offer, that's something that the trial court can take into an account, especially considering the fact that he's still able to maintain his high standard of living may also go into the credibility determination of, is he motivated to actually find a new job? So I think if the court believes it has to find an implicit finding of bad faith in the trial court's order, I think there's plenty of credibility weighing and evidence that could support that here.
When the parties mediated last, I guess, March of 2022 or earlier in 2022, one of the resolutions was that if your client believed that appellant was not acting in good faith in terms of his job pursuit, that you were entitled to bring a motion, bring that issue to the court. Your client didn't do that. I mean, isn't that something that would support appellant's argument that this isn't a bad faith situation, and that's why the district court didn't make any finding about bad faith?
Well, she didn't make that motion because, again, she doesn't have evidence of what he's saying in these job interviews. But nevertheless, I think the trial court can look at the record and look at what he's saying and say that the trial court just doesn't believe husband when he says he's trying to get these jobs. Wife didn't think that that was necessary to bring a bad faith motion on that, but there's nevertheless enough support there for the court to make that analysis.
Was your client getting copies of his monthly budget as part of those reports regarding him seeking work, or did she receive a copy of that when he filed his motion for modification and saw that his expenses were $11,000 while he was working this $14 an hour job?
It was at some point during the mediation, they exchanged discovery requests, and so it was an answer to an interrogatory. And he did say in his response that he reserved the right to supplement the budget if anything changed, and he never did. And so it wasn't a monthly report of a budget. It was just a one-time reported budget in response to an answer to an interrogatory. If there are no further questions from the court, respondent respectfully requests that the trial court order be affirmed.
Seeing none, thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
And Ms. Mack Wagner, you will have the last word.
Yes, just to respond that the court did acknowledge in its order, the court says, I acknowledge that you can't pay your budget, or you say that, but I think you can make further cuts. So again, I'd want this court to understand there's no real allegation that he could continue to pay that budget. The other part was...
Didn't she, in paragraph 27, And this, I think, goes to counsel's credibility point. The district court says the court finds the following to be unreasonable average monthly expenses during a period when a spousal maintenance obligation is suspended. And so, I mean, the characterization unreasonable sounds to me like it approaches a credibility determination about what your client was doing during that period of time. What's your response to that?
You know, I agree. What's hard is that above it, she says, I acknowledge that he's not paying the expenses because he said, you know, he wasn't, I guess, specific enough about what expenses he wasn't paying, but he did say in his affidavits, and really there's no evidence to the contrary, that he was able to afford the expenses. But hypothetically, I mean, even if he could pay those expenses out of his assets, that still wouldn't be an appropriate basis for having, you know, again, like let's say he had an expensive house and, you know, it takes time to sell a very expensive house. He would still have to pay the mortgage. And if he had to drain his assets to do that, would that then serve as a basis for him to pay maintenance?
He didn't come forward with anything like that, right? I mean, that evidence is not in the record. I mean, it's kind of like, well, suppose this, suppose that.
Well, what is in the record is that he received the severance payments and he did that those were assets, okay? So there was some, and it was never briefed that somehow the severance is available to be income. We never responded to that. We just happened to put in there that, yes, this is what he got back. This is a partial investment. This is another, he didn't even get all his money back. He only got part of it back. Why his assets were reduced too, not realizing that this severance thing was even going to be an issue on appeal. But, you know, I think he did say, like, specifically, look, ever since I lost my job, I cannot make this budget. I can't afford it. I've had to make cuts. He didn't just do a new budget. But again, we think it's clear error to have a person's income judged by what their budget is. And I think, again, there's that case law in child support that says that. And there's also case law that says that statute applies to spousal maintenance. And I think that's exactly what the court did. Thank you. Any other questions?
Don't believe so. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory limits.